The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the second tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the second tradition is Matt L.
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Randy, for asking me to speak on this tradition. If you're new, you are about to get bored, probably. But that's okay. It's okay. It's going to be very quick and painless. 10 minutes will be done. I'm going to read the long form of the second tradition, which is actually shorter than the short form. Go explain that, right? All right. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. So that is... That's the long form. The short form is, it's good when you're, it's a good start, right? The short form is for our group purpose. There's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And I think that's like a pretty crucial piece to leave off, for the long form. You know what I mean? But whatever. I'm just obliged to just say, like, why I'm an alcoholic, because otherwise, like, who cares what I have to say up here? You may not care anyway, but, like, I'm an alcoholic for two reasons, really. I have a physical allergy over alcohol, so when I pick up a drink, I can't control how much I'm going to drink. And the second thing is I have a mental when I'm actively drinking, I have a mental obsession over alcohol. So there's very little time between when I stop drinking and when I start drinking where that's the only thing I can think about. So if you're new, you may be thinking, why does this matter to me? Why does the second tradition matter to me? And I just want to say, like, overall, I think the tradition, I'm not one of these people, like, I hear a lot of people get up and say, like, I love the traditions. I don't love the traditions, but I do respect them, and I find them interesting. And my relationship with them is that when I came in, I thought they were boring and irrelevant, and now I think that they're interesting and important. I don't love them, but I'm making progress, you know what I mean? Work in progress. So I think to a large extent, the traditions matter to someone who's new, because, like, for me, I felt really lousy in AA for a while until I started to feel like I belonged. And I didn't start to feel like I belonged until I started to get involved with everything that was going on in here. And one of the things that's going on in here is that this group takes a lot of pride in practicing the traditions. So in that sense, like, when I started to take an interest in the traditions, I felt like I belonged. And when I felt like I belonged, I started to feel better. So that's just what I would say to you if you're new. And the second tradition, I don't think that all the traditions are, like, so relevant to someone who's new on day one. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't say, like, to someone who's new, if you don't practice the ninth tradition, your life is going to crumble to the ground. You know what I mean? But I will say that the second tradition is important, because what it is to me, what that tradition is about democracy. It's about the fact that everyone has an equal voice in AA, and there's no one that governs. There are no, you know, big shots. It's really, you know, when you're new, when you have one day, you're equally as, you matter as much as someone with, like, 45 years or 50 years or whatever it may be. It may not feel like that, but it is, I really do believe that to be the case. And I'll just tell you a little bit about my experience with the second tradition. You know, I came into AA with, like, I was like 90, I had taken, like, a pretty vicious beating, from alcohol, like so many of us do. And I was about, you know, like 95% sure I was going to kill myself. I had, like, a little bit of hope, but there wasn't much going on. And, like, this group really means a lot to me in that, like, I always get up here and I'm like, it's an honor. And whenever I speak at a meeting, I'm like, it's an honor and a privilege to speak here. And I don't always feel that way. I always say it because it's like a nervous tick, you know, like, it's an honor and a privilege to speak here. But I do feel that way here because it's just different. Like, this is my home group. It's, I have, like, a big place in my heart for it. It's just a different deal for me. You know what I mean? And, you know, as I said, I came in, like, pretty torn up, and this group really, you know, like, nursed me back to health pretty much. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Like, you know, I got better because of this group, and it's amazing, like, the way the ego rebuilds itself, because I go from wanting to kill myself to like being really happy to be alive because of what AA and because of what this group did for me. And the moment I started to feel better, like my eyes opened up and I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. Like this should be changed. And, it's just amazing. Like you just, like I start to, it's good to be stupid in AA. It's like the best thing in the world to be dumb in AA. You know what I mean? Like the moment I start thinking that I'm like a little too smart, like it's just so dangerous. And, my experience is that like when I started to notice certain things, thank you, in the group that like didn't sit well with me, let's just say I didn't keep it to myself. Like I decided to like, to pull people aside, like break up conversations, like pleasant conversations at fellowship to bring up something that was going on. You know what I mean? And, people were like, no, we don't agree. No one agreed with me. No one ever agreed with me, ever. I swear no one agreed with me, but like, it didn't stop me from voicing my opinion. And like, I became what they talk, like I'm not, it's amazing. Like, how can you be a bleeding deacon at like 6 months sober? You're not, but yet I think I was one. And it talks about in the 12 and 12, like the difference between a trusted servant, an elder statesman, and a bleeding deacon. A bleeding deacon is someone who feels like the group can't go on without them. And an elder statesman is someone who leads by example, who doesn't drive by mandate. And like my sponsor always says to me, he's like, dude, if you were to walk outside of the meeting and get like hit by a bus and get killed, like it's a good way to start a check-in call. Like he's like, people would be sad, but like, and give it 6 months and they'd be like, Matt who? You know what I mean? And like the whole point is that the group can go on without me. You know what I mean? And you know, I don't do that anymore today. You know what I mean? Like, there are certain things that I don't agree with necessarily that happen in the group, but you know what? I keep my mouth shut and I do the very best I can to fall in line and be appreciative and respect where I came from, which is like, I came from the bottom, and like be respectful and appreciative for what the group did for me. And I think it's okay if you're new, it's okay to notice certain things that you may not agree with. Like, I don't believe that like you have to submit to the, you know, collective will. You can have your own opinions. Like, I think that's totally fine, but I do the very best I can to fall in line and, you know, really just try to practice the group conscience and do what I can to serve the group. You know, the other thing that I would say in this tradition is it talks about how God may express himself in the group conscience. And the way I interpret that, and I may be wrong, but the way I interpret it is that not every single decision that the group comes to came flowing down from the heavens. You know what I mean? Like if the group decided to have like Oreos instead of, well, we actually have two kinds of Oreos here. I have a friend that does that commitment, but if the group decides like one cookie over another, I don't know if that's like divinely inspired or not. It may be, but it may not be. So, you know, there's just this one thing, like I just never tear up. I don't cry. I mean, I just have like a weird thing about it. But like when I was reading the 12 and 12 with my sponsor, there was something that actually made me kind of tear up with the second tradition. I remember like reading this story about Bill where he was doing 12-step work at a hospital, and the proprietor of the hospital, Charlie, said to him, he was like, you know, you can make a lot of money doing what you're doing here. Like if you set up an office, you know, we could bring in a lot of money. And Bill was like, good idea. Why would that not be a good idea if someone told you you can make a lot of money? And, you know, he really believed that that was what the right thing to do was. And then he brought it to the group and people were like, pump the brakes. Like that's a bad idea. And he talks about how he obeyed the group conscience and he led by example. You know what I mean? Like he didn't say this group can't, he easily could have, he was in a position, I think, more than anyone to be like, I created this, you know what I mean? And he didn't do that. He obeyed the group conscience pretty much immediately. And, you know, I look at this tradition, like the way that it applies in my life today is, like in my relationships and stuff like that, I don't govern. Like I don't look at myself as an authority. In AA, I don't look at myself as a bleeding deacon or as an elder statesman. I guess I just look at myself as a trusted servant. You know what I mean? Not that I've been like trusted with so much, but still like a trusted servant. You know what I mean? Like, and I just think like if you're new, you know, really, really think about the fact that you're probably not feeling good about yourself. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I wasn't feeling good about myself for a long time. And, you know, your voice matters, and, you know, you have just as equal a right, to influence the group as anyone else. And, you know, I'll just say, like, I'm so grateful for the group, and, you know, everything that I have in my life really came from AA and came from here, and I'm just so grateful. And again, thank you, Randy. I appreciate it.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Hallie.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Hallie. I'm an alcoholic. I'm so grateful to be here. It really is an honor and a privilege, and that is a nervous tick, and I mean it. thank you so much, Jeff, for asking me to speak. Can everyone hear me? Oh, great. My sobriety date is December 30th, 2008. I have a sponsor. She is a sponsor. I sponsor women. My home group is No Serenity Till Brooklyn, and I'm working the steps over with my sponsor and in four right now. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I love that it's 10 minutes because I love talking about myself because I'm an alcoholic. so I love having to keep it really short and really, really just get to the basics. So what it was like, I am one of those people, I believe I was born an alcoholic. And by that I mean that alcohol is my solution. That's the solution to the disease I have, which is that I am ill at ease in the world without a solution, which is either spirits or spirituality. Spirits are what I found first and what stopped working and why I had to come here. I don't have a single memory of being comfortable as a child. That sounds like a joke, but it isn't. I don't have a memory of being happy as a child. The only times when I was happy were when I was by myself. And that really is the root of this disease for me. That's this disease distilled, which is that I really just want to be alone. I don't want to talk to any of you guys. And I want you guys to just love me more than you've ever loved anyone. And pay so much attention to me, but also please go away. And that's why I'm a miserable person without spirits or spirituality, because I can't do that. That's an impossible existence to do both those things at once. What I love so much that it says in our literature is that we're plagued by loneliness. And that's how I was. And what I also love is that it talks about how we have both, you know, this state of mind that's at once grandiose and insecure. And I remember when I first read the literature, I thought, oh gosh, I really am an alcoholic. Like, even more than the drinking, that's what I identified with. I at once thought, I'm too good for you. I mean, and even as like a 5-year-old, I remember thinking that, like, thanks for the play date offer, but I'm good. I'm just going to talk to myself in the corner. you know, I'm too good for you, and I don't know how to talk to you. So, of course, when I found alcohol, it was just such a relief because I didn't have to walk around with these voices in my head that were like, you're too good, you're not good enough, talk to them, go away, play in the corner. Like, I could just be present. That's all I wanted to do was be present, and I couldn't be present on my own, on self-will. I just didn't know how to do it. I had no tools, and alcohol brought me into the present moment, and it really worked for a relatively long time. I didn't realize why it worked, but I realize now it worked in that it connected me to my higher power in a way. It was a shortcut with many bad consequences, but it worked for a while. It really was a connection to God. And that's why I loved it. I really felt when I drank, like, oh, here you are. Like, I felt like, and here I am. You know, here's who I'm really meant to be without these voices telling me I'm too good and not good enough. I'm very grateful that the consequences for me came pretty swiftly. So I did feel, you know, like our book says, that sense of ease and comfort that come from taking a few drinks. I could not take a few drinks, though. As soon as I had a sip of alcohol, I needed to have as much as I could until I was passed out in the corner. So I graduated from playing and talking to myself in the corner to passed out in the corner. And I also, part of my disease is denial, where it told me that that was normal, that it's okay. And again, it said like, okay, I know other people don't drink like that, but you're special. Like, it's okay that you do that because the rules don't apply to you. The truth is, thank God I have a gut that told me, no, that's not right. But my gut knows. My gut always knows because that's my higher power trying to talk to me is what I found. But I just kept drinking to sort of drown that voice out because the disease is so powerful and it wanted me to just obliterate myself. The way I always think about my disease is that my disease's dream for me is to say bye and then like rent a car, drive upstate, rent a cottage by myself, go to like a liquor store, buy as much liquor as I can afford and just stay in that cottage and just drink myself to death. That's my disease's like dream. That sounds amazing. And so my disease will do whatever it can to get me to do that. And I'm really grateful. I hit bottom relatively young. And I had a white light moment where I woke up out of a blackout. I knew I should have cut my hair shorter. woke up out of a blackout and that was very normal for me. A little bit different that night was that I had said, okay, I'm going to have two drinks tonight. Certainly failed at that and woke up out of a blackout, looked in the mirror. And for whatever reason, this is what stopped me. I had a big gash in my face and no memory of how that had happened. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh, this is not normal. I'm not better than or worse than. I just really have a problem. And I was able to ask for help. And that's when everything started shifting. I came to this meeting when I think I had 16 days. That in and of itself is proof of a higher power to me that... I lived in Brooklyn. Someone I didn't know said, could you please meet me on the Upper East Side at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday? And I was like, okay, like that's higher power because that's not me. I didn't want to go four blocks from my house to meet anyone, but I was willing. I was somehow really willing. And I started working with a sponsor and I started working the steps and, I started getting closer to that higher power. One of my favorite passages in this book is, where it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. That really resonates for me. I grew up in a home with atheists. We laughed at people who believed in God. We thought they were very stupid. that's just what I thought. So, like, I remember when I came here and I saw God here, I was resistant. And a little, I felt sorry for you guys, but I kept coming because I was desperate and because deep down within me was that fundamental idea of God. So at once, like, the surface diseasey me was like, I'm better than you guys. And the deeper part of me was like, you need that so bad. And that's what this program gives me is like a real connection to that deeper voice, that still small voice, as I've heard it called, which is my higher power. And I'm so grateful we have these tools that are just, they guarantee us, if I work these steps, I get to have a spiritual awakening. I can't be reminded of that enough, that the 12th step doesn't say, crossing our fingers, hope you get it. It says, like, having had a spiritual awakening, you're going to have it if you do this. The sort of, the trick is I have to do it, and I still have this disease that's like, don't you want to read the news instead of praying and meditating? Wouldn't Facebook be fun instead? And like, in a way, that's okay because I get to learn from my pain. And like, when I go off course, my higher power is very loving and reminds me. And it's like, how does it feel to stay up until 2 a.m. reading the news? How do you feel now that you don't have time to do your 11th step this morning? Does that feel good? Cool. Maybe tomorrow you can do something different. That's really how my higher power works in my life. Another favorite passage that has really been something that I'm leaning into a lot lately is our every thought as ex-problem drinkers has to be our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Super duper not my instinct at all. as an alcoholic, I love thinking about myself. I love talking about myself. I love playing in the corner by myself. Like I said, that doesn't make me happy, or it kind of makes me happy in the short term. And then sure enough, I'm separate, apart, different. I feel isolated from you guys. And the solution to that is through these steps is through service, you know? And so that's something that I've like really leaned on a lot, in the last year or so, is just like throwing myself into service, throwing myself into, my interactions with other people and really taking an interest in others and trying to be useful. And, thank you. And that's really revolutionized my life, because I can do that anytime, anywhere. I can obviously do that at a meeting, you know, through service commitments with sponsees, but I can do that at work. You know, I worked very closely over the last several months with someone who really talked a lot. And we were in a very small room and she talked a lot. I've talked about this at other meetings, so if you've already heard me share about it, I'm sorry, but it was a spiritual awakening for me, because for months I was like, I don't think I can hear this story again. I was like really freaking out a little bit. And then I was like, why don't I just listen? Like, I can just listen. I can do that. I know how to do that. And that was my disease. That was like, but I have to talk about myself now. It's like, no, I don't have to do that. I really don't. I can listen. This woman wants to talk and I can listen. That shouldn't be a revolutionary idea for a person, but it is for me, because I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic. And when I was able to do that, I had a lovely time with her, and this job ended, thank you, a week ago, and she said, thank you so much. This was such a beautiful experience for me, and I was able to say, me too, and I really meant it. And that's what this program gives me, a connection and not isolation as a result of getting closer to my higher power through these steps. Thanks for letting me share.
And tonight's main speaker is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa Alcoholic. Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks, Randy, for asking me to speak. I'll speak into the mic. Gosh, hearing all the newcomers, like we do every meeting, you know, and being up here, qualifying to be the 30-minute speaker is like, it's a gift, and it's been an amazing ride. And I remember counting days here and sitting through anniversary night and like the 1 year celebrants and thinking like, 1 year, you know, like how am I ever gonna get 1 year, you know? I just celebrated 10 years and like, you know, it hasn't all been easy, but like it went fast, because, you know, like I've just been able to, like I've never left AA, you know, like I think that's, you know, and the steps and, you know, all the other things, but like I've stayed in the middle of the pack, you know, and, you know, life happens and good things and bad things and all of that, but like, all of a sudden, you know, it's 10 years later, and it's just incredible. It's amazing. So what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. Yeah. So, you know, what it was like, gosh, you know, I wasn't like, everything was good. Like I had a great family, great family, raised in a great house, you know, and me and my sister, and you know, on the outsides, like I was always doing what I was supposed to be doing, and you know, things were fine. I kept busy, which has been the key to my, you know, part of the key to my sobriety still is like, just stay really busy, you know, maybe you won't get into any trouble. Like just put a lot on your plate and like, you'll be okay. You know, so that was sort of the formula then. And, you know, in hindsight, only in hindsight, when I started to do the work in here and like hear your stories and all of that, I realized like, oh my gosh, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin, you know? And when I came in, I remember saying like, if I could just get back to when I was like 16 years old, like I'll feel good. I'll be happy, you know? And then like the longer I stay, it's like, whoa, like, you know, like I needed alcohol, you know, like I was so uncomfortable. And, you know, you probably wouldn't know that because I was outgoing and, you know, I made it just seem like that wasn't the case, but I really was desperately uncomfortable. And now I know, like, in a lot of fear, you know, and when I look back, there was like, I mean, talk about like even today. So 10 years, a lot has changed and nothing has changed in that when Randy asked me to speak on Sunday, I was not thinking about what I was going to say, but what was in my closet and what I was going to wear, you know, like that has not changed. A lot of other things have, thank God, but like you know, in that same vein, like growing up and people calling on a Friday night and like the phone was ringing, you know, like I wasn't one of those people where it was like isolated, you know, but I was self-isolating because I thought, oh my God, you know, what am I going to wear? What am I going to look like? What am I going to say? What are they going to think of me? Bah, bah, bah. Like these were people that I have like real relationships with that I was really, you know, hung up, and it took me like a really long time to get out the door, you know, and it was kind of a joke, but like I would be like 2 and 3 hours late to things because I was so me on me, insane, like, you know, the hair. And I love what you said, like, I knew I should have cut my hair. You know, it's like, that's our thinking. Like, you know, if I had a different haircut, if I had a different shoe, if, you know, pant, like, I would be okay. I would feel okay. And, you know, I could go to the, you know, the keg party where no one's paying attention to me at all, you know, but like, That was my thinking. And anyway, so whatever, I got, you know, got through it. Everything was fine. I got my first job. And that's the other thing. It's so funny being in the rooms long enough, you hear a lot of speakers, and speakers were like, you know, I was raised in like an Irish Catholic family, and like the only requirement for like you were not an alcoholic if you were employed, you know? And like that was like kind of like that's totally the thing in my family too. Like, you know, there's a lot of sobriety in my family, you know, and I just remember like my cousin, like, you know, he was really ill, and it was like very like apparent that like this kid was like, you know, dying. And my uncle, God bless him, like he calls, we had lunch together, and then he like calls me on the phone. He's like, he doesn't look good. I was like, I know, like we got to do something. He's like, he needs a job, you know? I was like, okay, like I was more thinking rehab, but you know, like employment is key, you know? So, but anyway, you know, it's all good. And so, yeah, so I got the job, working like a maniac, again, protected me from, you know, a lot of consequences, but always when I drank, it was like off the hook, you know, and never with the intention for it to be that way. 'Cause again, my mind was like nothing was really wrong in my mind, you know, but I was so uncomfortable that I needed to get out of myself. So I just kept going until like I felt okay. And, you know, not everyone's heard this story because there's so many new people, but so I got the job. I moved to the city. I'm on my own for the first time. We go to this training and I got a promotion. And there was this training, and I'm doing the training the next morning, and it was the first night, and they said, okay, we're going to go to the bar and finish up, like, what we have to do for the morning. So my mind's like, best job ever. Go to the bar, same thing that happened that night and for the next 5 years was that the people who could have a couple drinks and do what they needed to do did exactly that. I found my people and continued to drink and stay and drink and stay. And like, it was a little nonprofit. So we all like lived on other people's couches. And so people were staying with me and, okay, Melissa, like, you ready to go home? And the answer was always no. Take my keys. Here's my address. Don't worry. My roommates won't care, you know? And then next thing I know, I'm at this apartment of these two guys that like work for the company, but you know, I've met them for the first time, and we continue to drink. And the next thing I know, I'm coming to, and I hear something, you know, and I wake up. I'm literally like on the floor of this apartment, and it's my cell phone, and it's on the other side of the room. And I pick it up, and it's 11:30, and I was supposed to be there at like 8 a.m. with like the bagels and the cream cheese and delivering the workshop, and it's 11:30, and they're like, where are you? You know, we've been waiting for you. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you know? And I was mortified, but, you know, again, I did what I always did, which was go to the Gap, get a new outfit, change in the dressing room, and then rush to work. And, you know, and I didn't get, like, it was sort of like a rite of passage. You know, it was that kind of place. And so we, you know, it was okay. And I thought, okay, this is the place. These are my people. It's great, you know. And fast forward, like, my life just got really, really small. You know, it was like fun in the beginning. You know, I was young. It was okay. But then after a while, it was like, why can't I have a couple of drinks and go home? You know, my best intentions were really always to like return your phone call, you know, say that I was going out to dinner and actually show up. I love, Jeff always talks about this, and it reminds me of, like, I grew up on Long Island, and I go to visit my parents, and I go to Penn Station, and I go to tracks, and I'd say, okay, I'm gonna get the 6:13, and I'd go to track, you know, it's like tracks, you know, but like, yeah, those were my places, you know, like, I didn't want to be fancy at all, because I felt like so much better about myself. And I would drink, and then, okay, I missed that, but I'll get the next one, drink and miss that and get the next one. And then it was just like, you know what, I can't make it, whatever. And then the call the next day to work that I got food poisoning, like, how many times did I really said I got food poisoning so many times, you know, which is just ridiculous. So life got really small, and there were two bars across the street from where I worked, and I mean, it was literally like across the street. One was there and one was two doors down, and like, you know, that was my life. I would get up, I'd go to work, I lived all the way uptown, I commuted downtown, you know, basically I started to tell myself at about noon, I won't go to the bar. I won't say yes when they ask. I'm not going to do it this time. I told them I would, you know, my roommates who were these amazing, wonderful people, I would say I would come home and watch Law and Order with them. And, you know, we'd do normal things. And, you know, the person would come around and say, hey, we're going to get a few drinks. And, you know, somehow the answer was yes. And then somehow the body was delivered across the street. And then somehow it was 6 a.m., and then it was too late to go home all the way uptown. And so I decided it was a good idea to sleep at the office because I had a toothbrush and a couple of accessories in my drawers. So no one would know that I had slept there and I would be presentable. You know, and this is when I always forget the line in the Big Book, but like the, I don't know the line, but like the, something about like how the craziness becomes like normal, you know. So in my mind, I'm thinking it's funny, it's okay, you know. And anyway, what happened was my coworker who drank like I drank, but she was married and had a nice apartment. She called me one day and she said, I think we have a drinking problem. And it's like, what are you, insane? Like, you know, forget that. You know, she was reading this book. It wasn't AA approved, but it was a story about this woman's drinking in her bottom. And she said, I'm reading this book, and I really identify, and I'm going to AA meetings, and here's what they're telling me. Okay, I was like, just come back. She was traveling. Come back, we'll have a drink. You know, we'll get this sorted. Like, don't worry about that. And she came back, and I remember, like, you know, and it's just so interesting, like, when people present the truth, like, now I know this, you know, being sober a long time, like, it really, like, you know, that's the intuitive thinking, and that's, like, you know, what God would have me be and do, like, you know, that was, like, a seed was planted, and I remember we went out, we had this work event, and then we went to a bar, and I remember, I knew she wasn't drinking, so I was really trying not to drink, you know, and I just remember sitting there, like it was yesterday, and like holding onto my seat and just thinking, okay, it's okay, you don't have to drink, you know, you'll have a water, it's fine, and this is the tape in my head, you know, and finally she must have seen like how uncomfortable I was, and she goes, you know, Melissa, it's okay, like you can drink. I was like, you know, so I get the beer and we talk and, you know, she's, this is what I'm hearing. Okay. Well, and then she goes, okay, I have to go. I have a dinner, like Will's picking me up and we're going to a dinner party. And you know, you never know what like gets your wheels spinning. But for me, I was like, I'll never go to a dinner party. Fast forward. I never go to dinner parties in real life now, but that's not the point. The point was like, oh my gosh, like my entire life is going to be like going to this job, going to the bar across the street, and like that's it. Like, you know, nothing more, you know, nothing more. And so I proceeded to continue to drink a lot on my own. I knew Amanda. We had gone to college together. She got sober in college. So that was like, you know, what we talk about, like that first, you know, example of sobriety and really the attraction of the program. And even our friends who like did not have drinking problems, we'd all kind of sit around and comment like, she's really got it together. You know, like we were all like so young and she kind of like, you could just see she had like a purpose about her and had it together. So anyway, I texted her that night, like, I think I have a drinking problem. And, you know, I regretted that very much later, but it was out there. And, you know, like a good AA, she's like, okay, like I'll, you know, I'm going to come over tomorrow and we're going to talk, you know? And so I was living with two of our like mutual friends from college, and she came over, and, you know, it was great. Like she did it right out of the big book. And I always talk about that, you know, when I'm in big book studies and at the podium, because it really was, you know, I can't say how much that helped me and how important that was, and a good reminder for me, like if I'm ever presented with that I really should stick to the literature and not my opinions and things, because I really wanted her to say to me, like, yes, Melissa, you're an alcoholic, or no, Melissa, you're not an alcoholic. And I would have just taken whatever path, you know. And thank goodness she said, like, first she said, stop drinking for 30 days, and it's not happening. And then so she had a second suggestion, which was try to have two drinks and leave, you know, leave it alone. I said, okay, I'll try that, you know. And so thus began the two drink plan, which lasted 4 days. And literally, and it was a perfect experiment for me, because, you know, because I still had the job and I still had the apartment, and, you know, I was young and there wasn't any consequences except for, you know, me kind of knowing, like, this isn't okay, you know, like, why can't I not drink when I say I'm not going to drink? And that was a great experiment, because I would wake up in the morning and the first thought would be, okay, where am I going to get the two drinks? What are they going to look like? How am I going to get the biggest bang for my buck? Like, you know, and then after a couple of days, I'm going, you know, a lot of people, probably most people don't wake up and this isn't their inner dialogue, you know? And so that was like, okay, that helped me. And after doing this two drink experiment, I like went on, you know, like the bender of all benders. And like, I just remember, like, there wasn't enough alcohol in the world. Like, I was at, you know, like my typical like dive bar and was like, keep them coming. Like, you know, like it was like disgusting, you know. And another big engagement was missed that next day. And anyway, so on and on, more like this, I continued to drink and experiment and think that I could try to manage and control it. So I said, okay, I won't hang out with those people. I'll only drink beer. I'll do this. I'll only do that. And, you know, everything just completely failed. You know, I hung out with only these people. Or I would try, okay, 5 days I won't drink. And then Saturday night would come and it would just, like, you know, all bets were off, crazy. So I kept bugging Amanda, and she was, again, a good AA, and said, okay, you know, why don't you, she got, like, here's a big book. That would be like the next meeting. And then read the stories in the back. Okay. So I read the stories in the back. I identified, you know, drinking, reading the big book, identifying. Then the next meetup, okay, why don't you commit to coming to Tuesday night? And I had come here 5 years earlier for one of her anniversaries, which we still joke about to this day, because she said, Melissa, like, I invited all of our friends and, you know, you were on that list or whatever. She goes, none of them showed up. She goes, but you showed up. And she's like, it was the craziest thing, because you could show up for anything. Like, it was, like, always, like, we don't know, you know, like, who knows, you know, like, voicemail box was full, like, you just didn't know, like, where I was gonna be. And she goes, you know, of all people, you know, and to me, like, if that's not, like, God, you know, I don't know what is, because something brought me here. And the thought that I also remember, was, like, if I need to get sober, I will come to this place. It's like so crazy. I can't remember what I did, by the way, yesterday, but like those are things that stuck with me, because I saw all of you guys and I was like, okay, they're good looking, they're well dressed, like, you know, like this seems like a good place. So that was also in my memory bank. And so I came to Tuesday, and my whole thing was I would have to drink around Tuesday, because I knew I had to be sober. So I was like, okay, I can drink Monday, but I can't, you know, anyway, managing and controlling. But it was great, because I was coming here, and actually I got to meet my first sponsor, because I was meeting people and she left an impression on me. And so when I was really ready to quit, you know, I called Amanda and she said, okay, who's going to be your sponsor? I said, who is that woman that said that thing? Which kind of ticked me off, but I knew that she could kind of see right through me. So again, higher power, God, you know, was like, pick that woman. And I did. And, you know, I just did what we do, which is like, come here, you know, just meet me every Tuesday. We're going to read out of the book. You're going to get a service commitment. You're going to go to this many meetings. You're going to call me every day. You're going to call me at 8:45. And again, like, I have no idea. Like I said, I could not return a call to save my life. You know, my voicemail box was full. But somehow, like, that next day, it was like, I would stare at the phone, like, at the strike of 8:45, be like, okay, you know, having no idea what to tell this person, you know, and I love that, and I tell people that I sponsor that, you know, who are new, like, I know this is awkward, like, you probably don't know what to say, it's just like, just call me, because there's gonna be a day when you really need to talk to me, and, like, you've already been doing that, you know, and so it started, you know, and we read the steps up in the balcony and we got to the third step and she said, you know, and I was, oh my God, turning my will, my life over to God, like that, you know, that's like crazy. What does that mean? You know, and she just said, like, you know, do you believe that, like, you know, something is working in these people's lives, you know, and I could definitely get on board with that. And I could see that. And she said, you know, just turn like your thinking and your actions over to higher power. Like that's what it means. So I could also understand that. And, you know, I did my fourth step. And again, I was like, I was one of those people. Some people come in and they're like, I got resentments. And I was like, resentment? Like, I'm just a good kid who like went left. Like, I don't have any issue, you know, like there's no problems here. And then it was like all of a sudden like, whoa, you know, like I can't believe it. You know, like all this like kooky stuff that I was hanging on to, you know, for, you know, a million years. And so much of that was lifted just in that experience of the fifth step. And then there was stuff that like, you know, I'm probably still writing out in some form, you know, but so much garbage. And she said that, like, you're literally coming in here with like a loaded up backpack of stuff and it's weighing you down and we're going to get rid of that, you know, and you're going to feel lighter. And that was my experience. And, you know, I've learned like 6 and 7 is really like now, like a lot of the work that I have to do in recovery, you know, and in the early days, I'm like, oh, it's 2 paragraphs. Like, must not be that important, you know, like keep going. And now, you know, it's so much of like what I, you know, the work that I do, which is like, you know, really taking a look at those character defects and like asking God for the willingness to let them go or, you know, act differently. And, you know, the amends process, you know, just unbelievable and incredible. Like thinking, you know, like talk about like looking the world in the eye, you know, and just again, like I didn't have like a litany of, you know, no like heavy duty stuff that I could impress you with, but like, you know, just little itchy, scratchy things that it was like, you know, I got totally wasted at your wedding and like, didn't give you a gift, you know, like, you know, ew, you know, like, I just like, I don't want that, you know, like, let me clear that up, you know, and, you know, and to my parents, you know, geez, you know, for like, you know, actually they weren't like really exposed to a lot of my active alcoholism. So, and again, like the family I grew up in, they're like, really? You know, like I was like, yeah, like I have a drinking problem, like, you know, but I wasn't around that much, but, you know, what I did make the amends for was like not showing up, same thing, like disappearing, not showing up, you know, not keeping them, you know, in my life. And one of the scariest I had to do was my sister, who's kind of been one of those like amazing, stories and experiences in sobriety because we're like 18 months apart, you know, basically like at each other's, you know, not at each other's throats, but, you know, those teen years were pretty dicey at home, you know, and we had too much like friend group overlap. And I, of course, had alcoholism unbeknownst to me. And, you know, so I was a handful and I thought she basically like hated me, you know, and disapproved and thought I was a disappointment. And anyway, so I attempted to make this amends to her, and she's not a touchy-feely type at all. Not that that's what this process is, but she's sort of like, okay, like, don't even go there, just keep doing what you're doing and like show up, you know? And so that's been the powerful amends, really, not in that first conversation, but really like, I will be there when I'm going to say I'm going to be there, you know? So many missed opportunities and appointments with her, you know? And I always remember too, like in my first, you know, gosh, like 3 to 5 years, we would make plans And then she would reconfirm with me like 3 times. And I'd be like, well, why does she keep doing that? It's so annoying, you know? And then I realized like, I didn't show up. Like, she thinks I'm not going to go and show up. And so just following through with that, you know, and getting, have a relationship with her and seeing that like, all of this stuff that I thought was disapproval and, all of that was like just a real like concern for me, you know. I was remember when I came out to my parents and they were like really understanding. And then they're like, did you tell your sister yet? And I was like, oh no. And they're like, okay, you know, it'll be fine. And you know, she actually didn't have a great reaction, but like years later, as you know, we've gotten closer and whatever, like, I can see that, like, she thought that, like, I would be, like, judged and, you know, I wouldn't have, like, the life that I, you know, wanted to have or she wanted me to have. And, you know, like, what a gift, you know? And, like, only in AA could I, you know, put on, like, the new pair of glasses and see it through that lens. Because otherwise it would just be, like, the same old, like, she doesn't like me, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, it's been amazing. Yeah, so, you know, now it's, okay, so what else do I want to say? just on the thinking piece, you know, like, I love this. And when I was new, I didn't really understand what anyone was talking about when they said, I came for my drinking and I stayed for my thinking. And now that I've stayed, I understand, you know, my first thought is not about picking up a drink. And, you know, and thank God, you know, that does change. And if you're new, like, you know, was said, you know, if we go through this process and we really do it, like, you know, the obsession will be lifted, you know, which is incredible. And if that's not like sign of a higher power, I don't know what is, because, you know, we all came in here thinking like, there's no life without alcohol. There's no way I'll be able to do it, you know? And then fast forward, like, you know, all these years later, you know, all the things that have happened and, you know, all the great things. And I was telling Eva, you know, so I started this new job, which is like, I'm still like, why did I do that? But actually it was a good decision. It was good. It's just, I'm so uncomfortable again that I'm thinking, oh, why couldn't I just stay? And, you know, but really AA teaches me like, you know, I gotta get out there in the world and like do this, and really that God is there and like, you know, the program is there and the tools are there and like everything's gonna be okay. But I had this meeting a week ago, and this guy who's like on the leadership team, said something to me. And what I heard was, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have hired you. Like, you're an idiot. And I just like was like, ugh. Like, I left the meeting, like, I couldn't breathe, you know. And until I like, you know, I did the inventory, I read it with Ava. You know, and at most of the times we're laughing because, you know, it's really crazy. And then a sponsor also is like, so you have to have a sponsor because, you know, if I'm on my own, like even when I'm reading the inventory, I'm still like, I think he thinks I'm an idiot. And then the sponsor says, you know, well, don't you think he was, you know, I'm not going to get into all the details, but you know, she's like, don't you think it's because of what's happening like in the news or something, you know? Oh, you know, like, it was like so obvious, you know, when she had said it, but like, again, my thinking is so, you know, can be so twisted that I didn't see it. So anyway, so fast forward a week later, did the inventory, had the conversation, you know, I'm still nervous, but I'm showing up. I'm like, it's all okay. And so we're talking, I'm updating him. He's like, I gotta tell you, he's like, you are doing such a great job. And he's like, yeah, like just all the ground you've been able to cover. And like, he's like, I am so impressed. And I was just like, eh. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, that is like not, you know, my mind literally was convinced that he went into that office and told the 4 other people on the leadership team, like, you guys, like, we better think about ending this, you know? And here we are, you know? So it's just really, it's really amazing and crazy, you know, but it's all good, you know, and as long as I apply the tools, like if I just do it and, you know, and show up despite what my thinking might tell me, like, you know, things like amazing and great things are going to happen. How much time do I have? Oh, wow. Okay. Jeff is so sweet. He's like, he goes like this. So yes, I had a baby in sorority. And actually, thank you, Jeff. I didn't forget you, Annie. No, but actually that story too is great because anyway, it was this long process and I don't know about you, but I'm not patient at all. And so in that process, you know, there was a lot of disappointment, you know, and there was a lot of like, wow, I can't believe this isn't happening and, you know, all of that. And anyway, like, I'm not going to get into all the specifics or details, but like, we ended up, at this hospital with this doctor and we kind of like had a different plan. And she's like, why don't you try like reciprocal IVF, which is, you know, anyway, not, again, details aren't important, but, but, you know, I was like, wow, you know, like if we hadn't had that many failed attempts, like if like Amanda didn't have this like heart condition, you know, like it all just seemed kind of like, man, you know, like we're not catching a break, which really is like the whole thing is like a luxury problem anyway, but you know, whatever. Disappointment is disappointment. And, you know, only to land in this spot where it was like, wow, like everything lined up and was meant to be, you know? And again, like, you know, that is God, like that is, you know, God's plan is like way better than mine, you know? Like all I can think about is like the outfit, the, what you're saying, what you're thinking about me. Thank you. And, you know, God just wants it to be like so much better, so much more expansive. And, you know, like my sponsor reminds me too, like, you know, if it was all easy and like I got what I wanted when I wanted it, like I would have nothing to share with, you know, the newcomer, with my sponsees, you know, and it's like, yes, you know, that is a gift today to say like, you know what, I've been through this and here's how I did it, you know, and this was my experience and to help others and to have like a true purpose is really where it's at. Like all the other stuff is awesome, you know, but when I'm most whole, when I'm most okay, like it's really working with other alcoholics and being with all of you. So thank you.